I want you to think about just for a little bit. You know, if your parents of school-age kids, somewhere along the line, you're going to hear the argument, but everybody else gets to do it. It's not fair that I'm the only one that can't do it. And the topic will vary by the age of the child. But it ranges from purchasing an item that you can't afford or that maybe you realize is just plain frivolous, to attendance at a dance or a lock-in where there's both boys and girls present and you don't really trust what's going to go on. And the problem is that the child has his focus only on the immediate fun. He can be one of the crowd. He's after the popularity. He can be a part of the fun and games, the excitement. But he doesn't always see the possible consequences. And it doesn't get any easier as a child gets older. Especially if they succeed in winning these type of arguments when they're younger. My friends sometimes have a drink, why can't I? My friends sometimes smoke, why can't I? And unfortunately, we become guilty of carrying some of these same arguments from childhood into adulthood. What do you mean I can't move in with my girlfriend? We're in love. We plan to marry one day. Everyone else does it. It's not fair to say you can't do that. But do you see the attitude is basically that everyone else gets to have all the fun? And I know it happens. I've had long discussions with some people over that very topic. They're trying to, you know, save themselves from marriage, but at the same time they're looking and say, but everybody else gets all the fun. Another one I've heard repeatedly is when someone realizes they made a poor choice in a spouse. And the marriage ends because of incompatibilities. Not because of fornication like the scriptures say, but just because they don't get along with each other. And then comes the well, what do you mean I can't marry again? She's going to get to marry. She's the one who left me. It's not fair. And the fallacy of the argument is the same, because the focus is on the immediate pleasure without considering the long-term consequences. You know, without a doubt, many sins are fun. That's what makes them alluring. They're fun. But what are the consequences? Have you ever thought about why Moses didn't become a high official in Egypt? After all, he was the adopted child of Pharaoh's daughter. He should have been slated to be a government official, if nothing else. Some high ruling bureaucrat someplace in Egypt. Think of the political power he would have, the wealth, the prestige. He could do anything that he wanted to because Egypt was a huge country. But when we look at Hebrews chapter 11, and in verse 24, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Moses knew that all the wealth and the power of Egypt was simply a passing moment of fun. He had greater long-term objectives. If you want to know what's going on, think about it. Worldly pleasures only exist in this world. They're not permanent because this world is not permanent. Our place in this world is not permanent. Often pleasures only last as long as the actions. It yields no lasting benefits. Ed did a really good job on reading Ecclesiastes chapter 2, but I'd like to go back to that just for a little bit. I know he read it, and he read it well, but I want you to think about it as we look at it. The point that's being made in Ecclesiastes, he's asking, what is the purpose of life? Why are we here? And in chapter 2, he gets to the point of saying, okay, maybe it's about all the pleasures. Maybe it's about all the fun. And verse 1, he says, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Let's just see if the pleasure is what the life is all about. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it's madness. And of pleasure, what does it accomplish? Have you ever thought about that? What do you actually gain from that pleasure you want to do? Not the pleasure itself. What do you change? What do you gain? He goes on and says, I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see that good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. Now, unlike the rest of us who probably would lose our minds, we get it, become an alcoholic or something like that. Because Solomon had God-given wisdom, even though while he was trying it, he still retained his wisdom. But he tried things like alcohol. He tried other things. He said, I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. I planted them in all kinds of fruit trees. Now, of course, he's king of Israel. He's wealthy beyond compare. He's got the money. I don't have the money to do that. But Solomon tried it. You know, wouldn't that be great? I could build anything I want. We've been talking about Marilyn was talking about landscaping her backyard. Solomon decided to landscape Israel. I made gardens and parks. I made ponds for water for myself, which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. Not enough water there. Fine, I'll pipe in water. I bought male and female slaves. I had homeborn slaves. And I also possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. I also collected for myself silver and gold and treasures of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. They didn't have radio back then, so he had his own live band. Now think about it. He's got all the money in the world. Buy whatever he wants. And then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart was pleased because of all my labor. And this was my reward for all my labor. You see what he's saying? It was fun to do them. But once he got done, where's the fun? Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done and all the labor that I had exerted, and behold, all of was vanity and striving after the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. And you say, why? He's got all these wonderful buildings and forests and everything else. Because every one of them takes upkeep. Someone has to pipe that water in. Eventually those pipes are going to break. What's going to happen to the forest? All those buildings have to be maintained. Eventually they're going to fall down. No, we don't have anything that Solomon built. They dug up a few gates, a few other things. But no, we really don't have much of this. Solomon have less, maybe some foundations. They're all gone. What did he gain? You know, if you look at it, pleasures are also expensive. Take a look at Proverbs 21. Proverbs 21 and verse 17. He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich. There is a cost in dollars and cents for the things that people want. Oh, I want that new car. Saw a really nice looking one, not just the other week. Had a price tag of well beyond my reach. But that's what people do. They spend it on their pleasures. But that's not just the only cost. Some pleasures cost your reputation. Take a look at Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs 6 and verse 32 says, the one who commits adultery with a woman is lacking sense. He who would destroy himself does it. Wounds and disgrace he will find, and his reproach will not be blotted out. Notice he also talks about there's another cost there. He talks about wounds. There's a cost of health. Take a look at Proverbs 5. Proverbs 5 and starting with verse 7. Now then, my sons, listen and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house, or you will give your vigor to others and your years to the cruel one, and strangers will be filled with your strength, and your hard-earned goods will go to the house of an alien, and you will groan at your final end when your flesh and your body are consumed. Now, some pleasures cost your health. If you don't understand that, think about people who are suffering with AIDS. But do you know the biggest cost is that sins will cost you heaven. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and starting with verse 9. Or do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor the covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. You cannot get to heaven sinning. Paul mentions this in Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3 and in verse 19. Actually, I'm going to start with verse 18. For many walk, whom I have often told you and now tell you, even weeping, that they are enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their appetite, and whose glory is in their shame, who set their minds on earthly things. Another problem with pleasure is it's a very unstable commodity. Go back to Isaiah chapter 47. Isaiah 47, we're going to start with verse 7. Yet you say, I will be queen forever. These things you did not consider, nor remember the outcome of them. Now then, hear this, you sensual one, who dwells securely, who says in your heart, I am, and there's no one beside me. I will not sit as a widow, nor know the loss of children. But these two things will come on you suddenly one day. Loss of children and widowhood. They'll come on you in full measure, in spite of your many sorceries, in spite of the great power of your spells, you felt secure in your wickedness and said, no one sees me. Your wisdom and your knowledge have deluded you. For you have said in your heart, I am, and there is no one beside me. But evil will come on you, which you will not know how to charm away. And disaster will fall on you, for which you cannot atone. And destruction about which you do not know will come on you suddenly. You can't avoid the instability of pleasure. You never know when it's all going to just suddenly evaporate. In fact, Habakkuk likens it to someone who's living on credit. You know, constantly borrowing more money. What's the problem? Eventually, it comes due. And in Habakkuk chapter 2, and starting with verse 6, I can get my there we go. Chapter 2, verse 6. Will not all of these take up a taunt song against him, even mockery and insinuations against him, saying, woe to him who increases what is not his. For how long? And makes himself rich with loans. Will not your creditors rise up suddenly, and those who collect from you awaken? Indeed, you will become plunder for them. Things come due. Sure, it looks like you can get away with it for a while. But then it comes due. Pleasure looks fun for a while. But then it all crumbles. And the problem with pleasures, it's never enough. They don't bring satisfaction. Take a look at Isaiah chapter 29. Isaiah 29 and verse 8. It will be as when a hungry man dreams, and behold, he is eating. But when he awakens, his hunger is not satisfied. Or as a thirsty man dreams, and behold, he is drinking. But when he awakens, behold, he is faint, and his thirst is not quenched. Thus the multitude of all the nations will be who wage war against Mount Zion. It's never enough. There's basically all illusions. It's all fantasies. And what I want, if you think about it, never gets filled. Because the more I have, the more things I think about that I want. In Ecclesiastes chapter 6, and in verse 7, all a man's labor is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not satisfied. That's one of the lures that's in sins. They offer something, but not quite what you want. It looks like this is going to give me what I want, but it's never enough. And so you keep coming back for more. And all sins work that way. But it's even things like money. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with his income. This too is vanity. Why is that? Oh, if I had $1 million, I'd be set for life, right? No, if you had $1 million, you have bigger expenses, and then you'd be wanting 10. And if you got 10, then you would say, well, I need 100 million. It doesn't matter how much you get. You always want more. Drugs and alcohol are the same way. Go back to Habakkuk again. Habakkuk chapter 2. And verse 5. Furthermore, wine betrays the haughty man, so he does not stay at home. He enlarges his appetite like Sheol. He's like death, never satisfied. He also gathers to himself all nations and collects to himself all peoples. An alcoholic is never, ever satisfied because eventually it wears off and he wants another drink. Drug addicts have the same problem. It's an endless cycle. And when you think about it, you know, scriptures put a different light on pleasure, don't they? It steps back from the immediate effect and shows us the larger view. In other words, why must I be honest when Jack over there is making oodles of money by not telling the customer the whole truth? Why? Well, does someone always get away with dishonesty? Take a look at Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10. And in verse 9. It says, he who walks into integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will be found out. One example, take some of these large companies that folded. I still remember Enron. They were playing games with their books. People were making oodles of money. And it all collapsed. Because you can't play games with books very long before eventually catches up to you. Which is going to give me a better night's sleep? Knowing I told the truth, and, well, didn't make as much money as I could have, or lying and making oodles of money. I would hope the lie would keep eating at you. Because is it worth forfeiting heaven just to get a little more money right now? Why should I envy the wicked? In Psalm 73, the whole psalm is good to read. But Asaph writes about the wicked in Psalm 73. And he says, surely God is good to Israel and to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet came close to stumbling. My steps almost slipped. For I was envious of the arrogant as I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For there are no pains in their death, and their body is fat. They are not troubled as other men, nor are they plagued like mankind. Therefore pride is their necklace, and the garment of violence covers them. Their eyes bulge with fatness. The imagination of their heart runs riot. They mock and wickedly speak of oppression. They speak from on high. They have their mouth set against the heavens, and their tongue parades through the earth. Therefore this people returns to this place, and waters of abundance are drunk by them. They say, does God know? And is there knowledge of the Most High? Behold, these are the wicked, always at ease. They have increased in wealth. Surely in vain I've kept my heart pure and washed my hands in innocence. I have been stricken all day long and chastened every morning. If I said, I will speak thus, behold, I would have betrayed the generations of your children. When I pondered to understand this, it was troublesome in my sight, until I came to the sanctuary of God. Then I perceived their end. Surely you set them in slippery places, and you cast them down to destruction. How they are destroyed in a moment. They are utterly swept away by sudden terrors, like a dream when one awakes. O Lord, when aroused, You will not despise their form. Or you will despise their form. Oh yeah, it looks like the wicked get away with everything. But their day is coming, is what Asaph says. Is a moment's pleasure with eternal misery something I really want for myself? Think about it. Sure, you could do the same thing as the wicked do. You could commit the same sins. But something holds you back. And part of that is the knowledge that is not worth eternal hell over. We can't live just for the lusts of this world. Over in 1 Peter chapter 4. Starting with verse 1. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourself also with the same purpose, because he who suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of time in the flesh no longer for the lust of men, but for the will of God. For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desires of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation. And they malign you. But they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. For the gospel has for this purpose been preached even to those who are dead, that though they are judged in the flesh as men, they may live in the spirit according to the will of God. The end of all things is near. Therefore, be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. The world is coming to an end. How will God judge you? If we live for the flesh, well, the flesh dies. Take a look at Romans chapter 8. Romans 8 and verse 13. For if you are living according to the flesh, you must die. But if by the Spirit you're putting to death the deeds of the body, you will live. And so the things of this world, going back to Philippians 3. Philippians chapter 3. And starting with verse 7. Whatever things were gained to me, those things I have counted as a loss for the sake of Christ. More than that, I count all things to be lost in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count them but rubbish, so that I may gain Christ. Oh, that people would learn that lesson. Take a look what Moses said in Deuteronomy 32. This is one of the last speeches of Moses before he died. 32 and verse 29 in Deuteronomy. Would that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would discern their future. PJ last week talked about, oh, if the world ended on Tuesday, how would things change? Oh, if I just thought about what's going to happen as a result of what I'm trying to do. The world is going to perish, and with it all its lusts. In 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2, starting with verse 15. Do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. The world is passing away, and also its lust. But the one who does the will of God lives forever. We don't want to be caught in the same trap the Israelites were caught in. God freed them from slavery. And yet, while they're in their freedom, they're longing to go back to Egypt. Take a look at Numbers chapter 11. Numbers chapter 11. And in verse 5. We remember the fish which we used to eat free in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlics, but now our appetite is gone. And there's nothing to look at except manna. And you know how silly that was? Oh, we got all that free food in Egypt. No, they didn't. They were slaves. They worked night and day for it. They got real free food from God. Manna appeared every day, and all they did was go out and collect it. But what do they long for? They want to go back to Egypt. And when you escape the corruption of the world, don't look back and long for fleeting pleasures. Ran across in an old bulletin a little story. I want to leave this with you. It's called The Bear in the Hot Stove. Once in a dense forest, a big bear broke into a cabin of some hunters. They were out at the time, but had left a fire in a potbelly stove. The bear saw the red hot stove and figured it was an enemy. So he ran over and grappled it with a great big bear hug. Naturally, he was severely burnt, but Mr. Bear thought the stove was fighting back. So he squeezed harder. The more he squeezed, the more he got burnt. What a vicious cycle for a vicious bear. And perhaps you think, what a dumb animal to hug something to his own hurt. But many people do the same. How many people are there who hug the world to themselves? Such as lying, dancing, adultery, immodest clothing, drinking, etc., and refuse to part with it. Let someone warn them of the danger, and they'll hug it all the more. Many cannot bear to part with the sins of the world, and yet they cannot be saved while holding on to it. Too many people are acting like that bear. I hope you think about these things. If there's anyone here who is not yet a child of God, there is no better time than right now to put on Christ. And if there's anyone here who is a child of God, would like the prayers of the brethren on behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of the selected.